Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Hello, everyone. I'm Charlotte Bellamy, a senior director in ICMA's Market Practice and Regulatory Policy team. I'm joined today, 3rd of December 2020, by four members of the ICMA Future Leaders Legal Working Group to discuss their views on the potential opportunities and challenges facing green and sustainable securitization as a product area. So perhaps we could start with you introducing yourselves. Maybe let's start with Tom and then move to Claudia, Tivan and Claire.
Thanks, Charlotte. I am Tom Capon and I am a structured finance and capital markets lawyer. I'm also chair of the ICMA Future Leaders Legal Working Group, which you just referred to, a working group that sits under the broader ICMA Future Leaders umbrella and which focuses on promoting the legal and documentary services that the ICMA offers, particularly among individuals in the first parts of their career in the capital market space.
Thank you, Charlotte. Thank you, Tom. My name is Claudia Mach, and similarly to Tom, I work in structured finance practice, covering regulatory and capital markets work, derivatives and securitization across multiple asset classes globally.
I'm Tivan Kader. I'm a structured finance lawyer. My practice focuses on securitization and derivatives. I'm also a member of the ICMA Future Leaders Legal Working Group.
I'm Claire Bridcutt. I'm a structured finance lawyer specialising in securitization and CLOs with a particular focus on the related regulatory environment.
Great. So thank you all for joining. Turning to our topic for today, green and sustainable securitization. And starting with the basics, what is it? How would we define a green or a sustainable securitization? And how does it fit into the wider context of green and sustainable finance and some of the work that ICMA has done in this area? Perhaps, Tom, we could start with you and then others feel free to jump in.
Sure. I think it's worth starting by taking a step back and taking a look at the broader green and sustainable financing spectrum across products. It's an area that's gained huge traction over the past few years, not only in the green bond and more recently, I suppose, sustainability linked bond space, but also in the context of sustainability linked facilities, for example, and other products. It's fair to say that the ICMA has been one of the leading institutions when it comes to pioneering this market in the capital markets context, taking, for instance, the green bond principles and the ongoing publications and discussions that the ICMA are involved in this area.
And just to add, it's worth noting that there's a broader context to this too, in the sense that there is constant discussion about the kind of recovery that we would like to have from the COVID-19 pandemic. There's varying arguments being made about how the interaction between businesses and the wider stakeholder community could be redefined, but one of the themes that is consistent with talk of recovery is that it should definitely be green.
And getting to the other part of the question, what do we mean when we talk about the green or sustainable securitization? It's probably worth starting with the green bond principles you mentioned earlier, which, while aimed primarily at the unsecured debt capital markets, are one core example from the drive to create parity of disclosure in this area and define a green securitized bond as a bond collateralized by one or more specific green projects, including but not limited to covered bonds, ABS, MBS, and other structures, and aligned with the GBP. The first source of repayment is generally the cash flows of the assets. So that should be our starting point here, I think.
There's two ways looking at this. On the one hand, you could have a securitization which is backed by a given pool of assets. The green designation of the securitization that issued derived from the ultimate user proceeds. But in that scenario, it becomes more like a traditional green bond, although secured. On the other hand, which is what we are focusing on here and what's more widely understood to be what we mean when we talk about green and sustainable securitization, is a securitization backed by a pool of assets that meets the relevant criteria. In this podcast, we are going to focus on this context of the public securitization, i.e. in the context of the international debt capital markets.
Okay, thanks. That's really helpful to set the scene. So thinking about these types of products and being a group of lawyers, I wonder if you could share your thoughts on the challenges that arise from a due diligence and disclosure perspective for these products.
I'll start on that one. I think just to begin with, lack of industry-wide standards and definition of what green securitization or ESG compliance securitization means is a particular challenge in the market. Traditional due diligence in areas such as environment, governance, human rights, and employment lack the cohesivity that's necessary to understand and use as a benchmark to measure whether a securitization is ESG compliant. Also, just the terms green securitization and ESG compliance securitization itself need to have a clear and industry agreed definition. At the moment, the term green securitization and ESG compliance securitization are used interchangeably, although arguably ESG compliance securitization covers a much wider set of criteria and includes green and sustainable securitization.
I agree. There are various arguments put forward on what an ESG compliance securitization should encompass and how it should be documented. The core argument put forward is that the assets backing the securitization should be the central component of the ESG compliance securitization. But the question is, how does one obtain and, I suppose, measure the data in respect of the ESG compliant assets? So one response to that question is that a transaction's eligibility criteria can be used to require that the portfolio of assets meets the relevant ESG requirements. Of course, once you have obtained the data in respect to the portfolio of assets, then there has to be a robust reporting system where the assets over time have to continue to meet that ESG criteria. I think later on in this discussion, I suspect we'll come on to how other more recent developments in the structured finance space will help create a more streamlined approach to this.
Thanks, Tom. It's obviously worth noting that any ESG criteria, particularly when you're thinking about the green and sustainability angle, would likely have to apply across the whole spectrum of asset classes, such as consumer loans, RMBS, CMBS, and even things like whole business securitization. And the question really is how one set of criteria can be used for such varied types of assets. For example, something like consumer loans, there may be considerations like origination and servicing practices, which might not be so relevant when you're thinking about something like a whole business securitization.
Absolutely, thank you. I think it's worth tying all of this by pointing out that from an underwriter perspective, in a public issuance context, this is going to raise all sorts of questions and discussions around how due diligence should be approached, which of course is of particular relevance to ICMA's core membership.
Yes, absolutely. Do you think then that the development of a larger green and sustainable securitization market could leverage off some of the product-specific aspects of securitizations that are sort of already embedded in the product? Claudia, can we start with you maybe and then others can add?
Absolutely. The securitization market is by its nature very data-driven, as alluded to earlier, both due to investor demand and particularly in Europe, regulatory reporting requirements. Therefore, securitization transactions have long produced detailed and granular reports for investors and now regulators, focusing on the performance of both the individual underlying assets as well as the securitization as a whole.
Yes, and the duality of reporting at both the asset and liability levels of securitization transactions means that industry participants, whether they're servicers, administrators, collateral managers, are already very well versed in aggregating and analysing huge volumes of data across multiple asset classes and jurisdictions. The additional ESG diligence and reporting metrics for green securitizations are therefore something of an adjunct to what is already happening, rather than a completely new phenomenon, which means that the securitization sector is definitely ahead of the game on this. And anecdotally, securitization market participants have responded positively to the prospect of utilising their existing experience to develop the green securitization space.
Yeah, thanks, Claire. I agree. And it's worth pointing out that the European securitization regulation has really made strides to formalise existing securitization reporting, both in terms of the data provided, but also how it has been made available. So this type of data harmonisation is definitely something that could be employed and leveraged off to ultimately enable all market participants to easily review and analyze ESG credentials, as well as, of course, the more traditional deal and asset-specific performance metrics that you would normally expect in a securitization.
Just on from a practical perspective, I would add that the European Commission's recent renewed sustainable finance strategy consultation mooted the prospect of a common, publicly available and free of charge ESG data register. It's probable that the existing securitization repository services, which currently host data for securitization regulation compliance, will obviously leverage the existing platform and adapt to providing a similarly centralized database for ESG information, if that ever comes to fruition.
Great. Okay, thank you. That was really interesting. Is it therefore fair to say that you all expect the increasing focus on green and sustainable finance, and I suppose ESG more broadly, to continue in the securitization space going forward?
Yes, I think building on what we've said already, it's apparent that we all agree that the focus on green and sustainable finance, and indeed ESG more broadly, will continue both in the short and the long term, I think. The minimum level of compliance is constantly being raised through new regulations and investor demands, so it's becoming increasingly costly not to offer sustainable investment products, both from a reputational perspective, but also in terms of marketability, particularly given that so many investors now have an ESG element embedded in their strategy.
Yes, I would add that historically ESG was quite heavily focused on environmental factors, which is demonstrated to a large extent by the relative familiarity of the market with green bonds, for example. However, it's becoming apparent that the COVID-19 pandemic has seen even more of a shift towards the broader interpretation of ESG, emphasizing social factors in particular, drawing on some of the opening remarks we made about rethinking the interaction between business and the wider stakeholder world. And it looks as though the European focus on ESG is very much set to continue in that respect. And it will be interesting to see if regulators globally will be influenced to take a more harmonized approach to ESG in the future. Although in the absence of a more global push for ESG disclosure and reporting requirements, investors may face something of a two-tier approach to ESG data reporting, depending on the jurisdiction they are looking at.
Just on that, I think industry bodies and the regulators in Europe have been especially vocal about the ever-rising importance of green and sustainable finance, particularly in the securitization space. For example, the European Union aims to be climate neutral by 2050. And in its report that was published June this year, the High-Level Forum on the Capital Markets Union noted that the securitization has an enormous potential to advance capital markets unions and the green finance, and that funding the ambitious EU Green Deal Action Plan also needs a functioning securitization market.
Thank you, of course. This has also had an effect on the regulatory landscape in Europe. As mentioned previously, we have the securitization regulation, which, although not primarily focused on ESG, of course, nonetheless directly stipulates that where data in relation to the environmental impact of assets underlying securitizations is available, the originator and sponsor of the securitization should publish it. This, I think, encapsulates the general mandate of the European institutions and agencies, including, for example, the European Securities and Markets Authority, so ESMA, to embed ESG factors in all their work. We'll get onto that a little bit later, I suspect, but there's also obviously some very specific ESG-focused financial regulations coming out of Europe, which will no doubt increase the momentum in this area.
Yes, indeed, that does seem to be the direction of travel. So you mentioned the securitization regulation, Claudia. With respect to data and reporting, what are the other areas where there is still work to be done or work in progress?
Thank you. I think it's fair to say that a perception of data gaps still pervades the ESG space. Until recently, there had been little standardization of ESG criteria or of how compliance is measured and reported. As such, the onus has largely fallen on investors to determine their own ESG criteria and evaluate the data available to them in light of this. This leads to standards varying on an investor by investor and product by product basis, which is unhelpful, not to mention across jurisdictions. This is one of the challenges we highlighted earlier.
Indeed, there is definitely a push to address this now, though. In the last couple of years, a number of industry bodies have published suggested criteria for setting and monitoring sustainability targets and standardizing sets of the most relevant ESG disclosures considered necessary to make informed investment decisions with respect to ESG. The ICMA green bond principles we touched on earlier are just one example of the way in which the market is pulling together to ensure the availability of information to evaluate ESG investments and guarantee, well, or I suppose, provide a high level of comfort on parity of disclosure.
Yes, and I think Claudia alluded to it earlier, but in Europe, there are, of course, a number of regulatory initiatives which are geared towards the development of sustainable lending products and also promoting a robust green finance market. In particular, they focus on the environmental aspects of ESG. For example, the taxonomy regulation will come into effect in phases from January 2022, so year after next, introducing an EU-wide classification of environmentally sustainable activities. Also from March 2021, so actually, you know, not too far away, the disclosure regulation will impose new transparency and disclosure obligations, particularly on certain market participants such as asset managers. Both these regulations should ease the due diligence burden on investors, particularly when they're sort of looking at the financial products ESG credentials. And it should also help address concerns regarding the potential for greenwashing through inaccurate marketing or selective disclosure. Notably, both the taxonomy regulation and the disclosure regulation operate on a comply or explain model. So market participants will have to make an express statement if sustainable investment criteria are not being taken into account, as opposed to simply adhering to the requirements of the regulations where they do intend to comply with ESG.
I completely agree with Claire. And although the advent of taxonomy regulation and disclosure regulations will obviously increase the regulatory burden for market participants, it seems as though the market is taking a collaborative approach to how the practicalities of compliance should best be dealt with. For example, certain cross-industry bodies have recently come together to prepare a letter to the European supervisory authorities, emphasizing the need to allow sufficient implementation time to align the reporting requirement with the availability of reliable and comparable ESG data. Additional time will also be needed for significant IT and operational preparations required to undertake the mass data analysis and generate the required reports, which is where, as mentioned before, those already complying with the securitization regulation reporting requirements at a significant advantage here.
Okay, that's really interesting. Thank you. So I think we have time for a final question, which is on the future of green securitization. Please could you share your thoughts on this? And also, what other steps do you think central banks, governments, policymakers could take with a view to facilitating this particular product? Teevan, let's start with you and then move to Claire, Tom, and Claudia.
Yeah, sure, I'll start on this one. Central banks and governments could incentivize the market by applying preferential treatment for central bank collateral eligibility programs, government investment in ESG transactions, for example, or other types of subsidies, tax relief, or guarantees for the underlying assets. This could help to address one of the limiting factors of ESG securitization, which is the lack of sufficiently large and homogeneous pool of green assets.
Yes, and I think any sort of subsidies or tax reliefs, guarantees on the underlying assets, which are then securitized in an ESG securitization, can themselves play a part in hopefully maximizing the chances of a green recovery from COVID-19 as well.
Indeed. And more broadly, the direction of travel from a legislative process is, of course, already very positive, and we would hope it continues and becomes more of a core focus for governments and regulators alike.
Absolutely. As well as legislation, there is a rise in ESG-related litigation, including negligence cases concerning human rights issues or lender liability cases, where there is significant increased risk of liability. This could in turn encourage more compliance from companies and states to produce more green or ESG-compliant assets.
Very interesting. Thank you all. I think that's all we have time for today, but it sounds like there's a lot going on and a lot of exciting work to be done in this area going forward. So thank you all again for joining, and thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you for listening. For more ICMA podcasts and further information on capital markets, please visit our website, icmagroup.org.